listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya,
and the Skakuya, Talitin, who Musqueam must stayo. Hello, and welcome to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Randy, and I am joined today by a guest, Henna.
Hello.
And we are doing a very messy special edition episode of Intersections-ish show for the 85th anniversary of CITR. So initially, the premise of this episode and what I aim to do... we should start with introductions. Okay, so backtrack. I'm Randy. Many of you may recognize my voice from Intersections. I've been involved with the show for 3 years now. On the air, I've been involved with the collective for longer. And then I also run the show Dog Ear Radio Book Club. And you might have caught my very kind of messy episode last night as well. So I'm back again today. And Henna, do you want to give a short intro?
Yeah. Hi, you were just listening to my voice on radio. If you had tuned into Word Goblins, I'm Henna. I'm the spoken word manager at CITR. And Randy and I have been working closely for the past almost 3 years now.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like 3 years. That's what's surprising.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So my initial premise with this episode is that I wanted to get in touch with the past collective leads of the... Well, it's now the Intersectionality Collective. But unfortunately, you know, it's almost summertime. People move away. They get busy. So that's not what happened. But that's okay. I love to talk. So we're here and we'll find stuff to talk about. I kind of want to start off with kind of a timeline for the Intersectionality Collective. So I have what I've, with my sleuthing, my internet sleuthing, this is what I've put together.
Love that.
So it was started in 2015 with all the other collectives. Mm-hmm. So the collectives at CITR, at least the Intersectionality Collective, the Accessibility Collective, mm-hmm. and the Indigenous Collective, I think those were the first three. Based on a blog post I found on the CITR website.
Okay.
That's, again, just from me, yeah. But at least those three are almost 8 years old, which is mm-hmm. pretty cool. Yeah. They're almost a decade old, which is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It feels there's a lot of stuff online for past episodes, which is really cool. Okay, so for a timeline, the Intersectionality Collective began in 2015, and it was initially called the Women's Collective. And the show that they produced was Lady Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then in 2016, so that lasted for 1 year. And then in 2016, it was rebranded to be the Gender Empowerment Collective.
Mm-hmm.
And the show was then called Babe Waves. So I'm sure if you were listening to the collective around that time, like Babe Waves would have stuck, because even when I came here to the radio station, it was already called Intersections, but like I heard murmurs of Babe Waves. So I think that was kind of a, you know, an impactful, I guess, point in the collective. Okay. And then in 2017, the collective name stayed the same, but the show was changed to Intersections. And that combination lasted until the spring of 2022. And then in the fall of 2022, you and I mm-hmm. rebranded the collective as the Intersectionality Collective. And this is basically we merged the Gender Empowerment Collective, the POC Collective, and the LGBTQ+ Collective,
yeah.
or Queer Collective.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to name it Intersectionality Collective.
Yeah.
And we kept the name of the show because, obviously, intersections, intersectionality, it works very well together.
That's correct.
I think so. Anyways, so that is a brief history, I guess, timeline. I did have one person send in kind of a recording of their experience. So I want to play that now to start us off because they were the first coordinator of the collective.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to hear from Eli right now. And Eli is going to talk about their experience with the collective. What it was like then, and they'll go into a bit about, like, Yeah, like what the collective was like when it was the Women's Collective and then why they chose to rename it and mm-hmm. change the name. So let's hear from Eli.
My name is Eli Holiday. I use they, them pronouns, and I am a film reference librarian and performing artist currently living in Tuckeranto, so-called Toronto, Ontario. And I was the original Women's Collective coordinator back in its first year, 2015 to 2016, when it was called the Women's Collective. I was brought on the first year that any of the collectives started, the Disability Collective, the Indigenous Collective, and the Women's Collective, which CITR was launching to try to address disparity on the airwaves. My favorite part of my role and the show, I mean, it was really special to be involved in the beginning of the project because so much of it was about seeing who in the UBC community would even be interested in being involved in a project like that and who felt like they didn't have space to maybe be represented elsewhere. The group that we formed, that original collective, was so incredible. I met so many fantastic people with such passion and drive and ideas and so much excitement for the project and for the idea of getting involved in radio in the first place. I think the collective was a space in which many of the folks got involved in radio in the first place, and then some of whom went on to be really big parts of CITR afterwards. I also really loved giving the opportunity to folks to try their hand at radio for the first time. I think we operated the show on a rotating model, so we would sort of pick a theme and people would, you know, we'd work on the structure together, but we would rotate through who was hosting. So it gave folks the opportunity to try new things, learn new skills, interviewing, running the boards, hosting a show, picking music, stuff like that. And all of that was really exciting and a lot of fun. I will say, I think actually one of my favorite parts of the collective project as a whole was how we discovered, especially going into the second year of it, that it wasn't quite right for the folks in it, that the idea of a women's collective felt too limiting, that the show name that we had decided on, Lady Radio, a number of folks didn't really like it, didn't feel like it represented them, weren't comfortable with it. And I think my favorite part of being a part of that collective and helping coordinate that collective was the ways that it needed to change and the conversations we had around what wasn't feeling right and where we wanted to go with it. That was really special, that we created a space where that kind of change and shift can happen, and that space where conversation can happen. And I think that was really important. So we ended up changing the name in its second year to the Gender Empowerment Collective. And I believe that the name of the show changed as well. Obviously, it's changed to this point. But that's where that process sort of started. And so, yeah, I think it's just really generative to create a space where, you know, we try to address a need or a gap that seems like it needs to be filled. And then in filling that gap, we discover actually how the solution maybe wasn't quite exactly what we needed and that needs to change and expand. And the fact that we did that as a collective and as a group was really important, I think, to the project. In terms of my influence or the influence of the collective on my path ever since, I mean, I haven't really thought about how much this is a part of my own gender journey, but not a woman anymore, or realized I wasn't a woman, so that was fun. I definitely think being around a lot of the folks in the collective, a lot of the genderqueer non-binary folks, really helped me sort of understand myself a lot better. And the ways in which, like, yeah, Women's Collective and Lady Radio also didn't fit me. I have also, I think, my involvement in the show was sort of the beginnings of my interest in working in the intersections of media and social justice, or media and representation more broadly. So I went on to work in a bit in publishing, a bit in book sales. I was a bookseller for 6 years, all independent bookstores with like social justice cores, and then went on to sort of expand that into the like media access and generation that is involved in librarianship, which is my focus now. My specialty is in like queer histories and queer librarianship, queer literatures and queer film as an extension. So yeah, I think those things are sort of all threads that the Women's Collective helped sort of start for me, as well as proving to me that I could do a coordination job. That was my first time with that kind of responsibility, and taught me a lot about myself and about work, I suppose, in general.
All right. Thank you so much to Eli for sending that in. It was really cool to hear from like the one of the first people involved with the collective, especially like the coordinator. That was really cool. Mm-hmm. One of the main things that I took away, obviously, because like thinking about the progression of this collective and like in particular, because like I said, the other core collectives have like stayed, like it's been unceded airwaves the whole time, which is so cool.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. But like this collective, it's obviously changed, it's shifted, it's grown, which I think is really cool. And that's like one thing that I thought of is because like when I first found out, it used to be like the Women's Collective or like when it, like Lady Radio, I was like, there's no way I would have joined. Like, there's
that's
no,
a no for me.
Yeah, there's even, yeah, there was no way I would have joined something. So I think it's really cool that like it took them essentially a year as a collective to like be producing content, and then, you know, working together and be like, okay, actually, you know, we've been doing this for a year and I think we can do better. And so like rebranding it to be the Gender Empowerment Collective, right, is a cool move. I think it is. And like it probably had a lot of the same underlying reasons that we did for rebranding it to be the Intersectionality Collective. So yeah, I just wondered if you do you have any thoughts on that, like what they shared for the progression?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks to Eli for sharing their thoughts, and it's really cool to hear from someone who was there at the inception point mm-hmm. of this collective, and the Gender Empowerment Collective / Intersectionality Collective has gone through a lot of transformation, which is really neat, and it's awesome that at CADR we're celebrating our 85th anniversary, that we're able to document that mm-hmm. and just because we have transitioned into something else does not mean that what we did previously was bad. It just does not work anymore, right? Mm-hmm. It's similar to like language, and it's so much rooted in language, because language, just with anything else, it gets outdated, antiquated, whatever you want to call it, and it just doesn't work anymore. And it's just outdated. And so I can imagine at one point in time, I guess there wasn't a lot of women representation in radio, whatever. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they chose Lady Radio, which I'm like, no, worked. But then I am so glad that they very quickly realized that, yeah, in 2015, like, this yeah. is not going to cut it. And it's fascinating. So as part of my job, actually, one of the most important aspect of my job is overseeing the collectives. And so we have 7 collectives right now, and it's interesting to look back and see we've added collectives and taken out collectives, but I really landed on this like 7 collectives, and I don't want to add any more collectives because it just gets yeah. really messy, and sometimes multiple collectives are kind of doing the same thing, so I'd rather have like less collectives, be stronger, if that makes sense. And so we've got like topic-based collectives, which are arts, news, sports, and music. And then we've got identity-based collectives, so intersectionality, indigenous, and accessibility. And at least in my time here in the past 3 years, it's really the intersectionality collective that, again, has gone through a lot of transformation. And also, actually, so previously we had a POC collective and an LGBTQ collective, which was then rebranded as the Queer Collective because LGBTQ was just a mouthful mm-hmm. and Queer Collective made more sense. But then I suppose I was like slowly realizing that those collectives, unfortunately, weren't able to gain a lot of clout because the Gender Empowerment Collective was just more popular. And then gender itself felt very limiting because
Yeah,
like Randy was and their collective were covering a lot of things from like social justice and race and mm-hmm. gender and sexuality, because all of that is intersectional, as yeah. we know. And so it just made sense to kind of group those two and merge them into gender department and then rebrand it.
Yeah. I mean, you already answered my next question, because I was going to be like, oh, we should talk about the process of why we rebranded it. But yeah, I think it was basically, I don't know if I came to you or you mentioned it to me, but I feel like we both kind of just realized it at about the same point where mm-hmm. like, because at that point there also wasn't really anyone running the POC collective no. and the queer collective. So they'd just been like, you know,
hiatus.
Yeah, I guess just on hiatus.
Yeah, and yeah. just hanging in the air.
Yeah, they were just like suspended. And then I had gotten to a point where I had grown the Gender Empowerment Collective to be like pretty popular, and I was like constantly getting new members. I was doing a lot of outreach. So I was like, hey, like I feel pretty confident that we're covering a lot of these things. Because I also shifted the show to feature a lot of guests. So we brought on a lot more like quote unquote experts, I've noticed, compared to I think past collectives, the way they've done it. Mm-hmm. Which, again, not like in comparison of good or bad, but I think it just shifts the show to make it a bit more like you're able to, I think, speak to more things because you're inviting people outside your collective on.
Yeah.
So even while like the collective has remained predominantly white, we're able to invite a lot of different guests onto the show to speak about things that we're, you know, maybe not well equipped to, or like we, you know, I also make them do a lot of research. I'm really push research. So we all come into our episodes having researched things. And I think that also allowed us like, or it allowed me to feel confident going to you and saying, hey, I think we're covering a lot of things to do with queer identity. We're, you know, covering a lot of topics related to BIPOC folks. Like, I think we can make this one awesome collective. Mm-hmm. And one thing I realized is, like, I mean, I've never gotten my collective super big, but when it has been big, all it does is make it easier. Because yeah. when you have a lot of people that are committed to, like, one goal, then it's a lot easier to, like, each take, like, a small section and work towards it versus, like, when I first took over the coordinator – or when I first took over as coordinator for the Intersectionality Collective, there was three of us.
Mm-hmm.
So it meant that, like, it was a lot more work on every single person versus, like, you know, I closed out this year with, like, eight, I think. And it, wow. you know, it went up and down in between mm-hmm. As, like, school years go, you know.
Tell me about your favorite year.
My favorite year? Oh, well, I think it was this year, because this year I got to see a lot more of the collective in person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the year that I took over, we were, I think that was the year that the universities closed. So I think that was when we were fully online.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, it was cool on one point because we were pre-recording and we've always been pre-recorded. Since I took over, we don't really do live shows. And that's been really awesome because we've interviewed guests from across Canada, across the US. Like, we're able to really reach out, you know, outside of the Vancouver bubble and, like, talk about so many different things. Like, we interviewed, I'm not going to remember the professor's name, but we interviewed this professor from a university in the States that runs, like, the kind of, like, I guess, like, diversity, equity, inclusion section of the university. And that was like really awesome because they had written an article that I read for one of my classes. Mm-hmm. So that was cool just on a personal standpoint to be able to talk to a professor whose work you've read. But also the episode was really good. We talked about racism in academia. And, you know, we all learned a lot from speaking to this professor. But like, you know, if it's live, you're not able to maybe, you know, communicate and talk to as many different people. Also, like, one thing I've learned in the last 3 years is, like, relying on only UBC profs is pointless.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to make your life really miserable. Yeah, so I would say this year has definitely been my favorite. I also had, like, such a good group of people, I think. And I was also, like, you know, 2 years into leading, I was pretty confident that mm-hmm. I knew what was doing. Like, I had, like, a process down for all the episodes, you know, and I was able to kind of, like, you know, give direction, but also, like, you know, actually, like, mentor people, which was really cool. I never felt like I'd mentored people before because I was still learning.
Yeah.
Whereas I think this year, you know, I was also the spoken word student exec. So I think I was, like, I felt confident being in more of like a leadership mentorship role. Yeah, it was really awesome. Yeah. And I had like, I had some in the collective. Yeah, all of the members were great, but I had like a graduated student. I had a few master's journalism students mm-hmm. that were in it. I had a couple first-year students. So it was like a really awesome group that kind of like spanned across different, I guess, like parts of your 20s, right? But still, you know, it's a good mix. You know, it's not like just a bunch of like first years or a bunch of fourth years. So we got a lot of cool perspectives, I think.
Just going to say, even if you before you picked this year, I would have already guessed. Because I just saw you really come into your role because, of course, you had the past 2 years of experience and then you, like, really had honed mm-hmm. down the role. And, like, I could tell that this year you, like, were like, yes, I've got a handle of things. I have a system. And so it was really great also watching you go through all this growth in the past mm-hmm. 3 years, right? Because sometimes after you're at any job or position, we feel like, oh, yeah, like, I've done enough and I can move on. But there's still so much to learn.
Yeah.
And you can only see it when you are at the finish line of, like, okay, yeah, 2 years or 3 years. And now I can kind of really feel like I got this and can teach people what I've learned. So that's really awesome. Because something in community radio is that, I don't know, I mean, this is a bit corny, but there is a pay forward and you're like, okay, so I didn't know anything and I know things and now I'm going to teach people. Because at CADR and other community radio stations as well, I imagine there's a lot of emphasis on education and training, and mm-hmm. that is one of our mandates. And it's interesting, like, it's our org structure is not very hierarchical, but it is in the sense of, like, support. And, like, I am supervising Randy, and then Randy is overseeing their collective. And so it's really a cool way to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also, I think it had a lot to do with the, like, spoken word student exec, too. Because mm-hmm. I was able, like, we hired awesome people, I think, to run the Indigenous Collective and the Accessibility Collective.
We also, like, did that.
Cleo and Nicole have just, like, knocked it out of the water.
Absolutely.
They've done so amazing. But being able to, like, that was cool for me, being able to, like, you know, meet them at the beginning of the year and, like, get them started.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, even just, like, showing technical stuff. Like, I did technical training this year, which was so much fun to, like, mm-hmm. teach people to be on the radio. Because it's pretty easy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can do it. If you want to do it, you can do it here, which I think is awesome. But it was cool and to see how their shows have developed and, like, the work that they've put mm-hmm. in and, like, the passion and how they care for it, because that's how I am. So it was so amazing to, like, know that, you know, because I'm graduating in 2 days and I'm leaving. So, like, to know that, like, you know, there are still people involved with the collectives in general mm-hmm. that have that amount of passion and drive is so awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be emotional. It's very fulfilling to kind of see that growth. And it does bring me joy to see folks on day one and then how they're flailing and they're like, oh, my God, I'm never going to be able to learn this, or, like, tech is scary or whatever, or, like, I hate my voice and radio is intimidating, which it can be. But really, yeah, passion is definitely a big key, plays a big role, and just constant dedication. And, yeah, shout out to Cleo and Nicole, who we hired this year, and I am so happy that they're staying on. Sad that we're losing Randy, but, you know, such is life. And I feel like you were a big support for them mm-hmm. Because I shamelessly would send them to you. I'm like, Randy has been around for a while, you can go bug them, they get it. And even honestly, Ruby, who's really taken on the role of the Arts Collective mm-hmm. and kind of really made it her own. So It's really cool. We have, like, a good team. Because in the past, similar to what you said, right, with the collective, where I'm overseeing the collectives as, like, running the collectives in the sense of, like, working with collective leads. And mm-hmm. so it's always, like, a bit of a mixed bag. Some people are, due to whatever, life and work and school, are not able to commit as much and maybe, mm-hmm. like, overcommit and don't realize kind of the demand of the role. And how collaboration is such a big aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, I don't know, everybody's style, but it very much is my style. I love collaborating with other folks and forming interpersonal connections at work and stuff. And I know you work well like that too. And we do have some folks who work well. And so, yeah, it really takes like a certain personality type and like some skills you need to have to kind of work in this kind of setting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great when you kind of get those kind of people and you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, this is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be good. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about what we're talking about.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
Students of UBC, join us. Join the SSN, a collaboration between the C4 Choral Composition Club and the Music Production Club. With us, you can find someone with whom to collaborate, someone with whom to make music. All skill levels welcome. ssn@gmail.com. Reach out. Together, we can make music. Join us.
All right, I'm gonna do it wrong. I'm about to spit in this mic like freestyle elfin, you know?
Okay. Wait, hold on. Does it make sense?
No, but who cares? All right, let's go. Finally, we... You're not even gonna last. All right. Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival, fountain, just back from France... Montreal? What the f***?
It's a script.
I couldn't even... What? Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival. Fountain, back from France. What are you even saying here? Oh, you're trying to say these are the things featured in this one. You should probably specify that. Because even a f***ing elf couldn't understand that, okay?
Think you can do better than an elf? At CITR, we want to have a variety of voices on the air. Want to write scripts? Do some voice acting? Broadcast your creativity? Volunteer with the CITR production department. No experience? We can also train you in everything required. Send an email to psas@citr.ca to learn more. And don't wait to get your voice on the air.
Do you love to read, but your friends and family are tired of you droning on and on about your latest book? Well, forget them, because you have me now. Hi, I'm Randy from Dog-Eared Radio Book Club, a book club coming to you through the airwaves from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. every 2 weeks on Tuesday evenings on CITR 101.9 FM. Tune in to hear the rambling thoughts of a fellow reader that are factually supported by my co-host of the week. Follow the show on Instagram at Dog-Eared Radio Book Club to find out about our next read.
All All right. Hello, CIT listeners. We are back. I'm Randy, and I'm joined by Hannah today.
Hello, hello.
This is a special edition episode of Intersections. This is all you're going to get for the rest of the summer till fall, because the collective is actually on hiatus. So this is a very special event.
Very special event indeed.
Okay, so I thought next we could chat about a favorite topic or episode that the collective's done.
Yes.
I hope you have an answer to this question.
Sweating.
I do. I'll go first. So one episode that always sticks with me, when I think it was like the second episode I ever did with the collective, like second or third episode I did as the coordinator, we did an episode called Lex Talked About Sex Positivity.
Mm-hmm.
I named it. I thought it was very creative. And we interviewed a sex educator from Toronto. I believe her name was Luna Matatas, I think.
That's an incredible name.
And it amazing.
Luna Matata, obviously.
Yeah. And she, like, I think... I like the episode. I do. I still think there's like parts of it that I really enjoy and I go back to and listen to parts of it. But I think the reasons it sticks with me is like it's obviously a very early example of our interviewing skills, which like, you know, we were all new to it, basically.
Yeah.
We were like going into it and, you know, we're writing these questions, but like weren't an expert on writing questions. And I think the second thing that sticks with, we were so nervous because the first episode we interviewed a prof who I had taken a class from. So like, it wasn't as intimidating because mm-hmm. we were like, oh, we know this person. But this was like a professional, like this was a professional that I had emailed with my little name being like, hey, can you come on our show? And she was like, yeah, 100%. I'd love to. But we were so nervous, like leading up to the interview, all three of us. And I think what stuck with me is she was so excited during the interview and like so mm-hmm. enthusiastic. She, you know, answered our questions and she would be like, oh, that's a really good question. I like that one. Or she'd be like, I really like how you asked that question. And I think when you're in your early stages of like learning how to interview, especially doing like recorded voice interviews, those encounters vary, like they impact your confidence so much.
Absolutely.
To have like, you know, a professional who's like probably been interviewed before, you know, as like a student collective be like, hey, like I'm enjoying this experience. And y'all are doing a good job. That just like really, I don't know. It left me feeling very like excited. Mm-hmm. I remember that feeling, which was like 3 years ago, which is wild. But yeah, so that's one episode that stuck with me. Yeah.
That's an endearing story. And yeah, you do need that ego boost sometimes, right? Like that validation of like, okay, yeah, I'm starting out, I'm just learning, but I do have the chops and what it takes and stuff. Tell me about a time. Now I'm going to ask you a question. I suppose I have a couple questions, but mm-hmm. what have you learned from running this collective for the past almost 2 years now? And it could be like professionally, personally, emotionally.
I feel like I've learned so much, like as far as like professionally, like skills that I like cold emailing people. That was like, that used to intimidate me so much. And now I'm like, I'll email anyone. I don't care. Cause worst case scenario, you don't email me back. Like yeah. It's not like I can handle, I've been rejected so many times running this collective, contacting people that it doesn't faze me anymore. I mean, it's always like upsetting if it's someone you really want to talk to. I think one thing that I've really learned as far as like leadership goes and like running a team is playing to everyone's strengths. And I feel like this is like any leader would be like, yeah, of course. But that was something that like it really takes, you know, experience, not necessarily to like come to that realization, but to be able to do it is like a whole nother thing. Cause it means that you have to get to know people.
Yeah.
Which, you know, some leaders don't, but mm-hmm. that was, you know, I really wanted to do that to get to know people and like just ask them and be like, you know, what parts are you passionate about? Oh my gosh, I'm blanking. Adeline. Right. Yes. That's the name I was thinking. So Adeline has been a member of the collective for, I think, a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And she is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And one of the things that she did that seemed small but was so important is she would format documents. So everyone used to just create documents, and then we realized that like Google Drive, you like own the document, and then it was a mess because past members would delete them. So I was like, okay, no one can create documents except for me under the collective email. And so I would like sometimes just, they'd be like, oh, I need to put notes on. So I'd create a document, but then I just like didn't have time, or I would go back to it. And then Adeline would have created this like amazingly formatted document. And just, like, without even, like, prompt. And so I eventually just, like, started counting it as, like, something they did. And yeah. I would ask them because I knew they'd do it anyways. But I feel like that's part of also being a leader is not just, like, expecting people to do it. So I would ask her, like, hey, as part of, you know, work for this episode, can you please do this? But that just, like, it made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I noticed. And so I think that's something I've learned is just, like, paying attention to people, like, you know, seeing what they kind of do, what they like to do, and then, like, playing to that and getting them to do more of that.
Yeah, no, that's a good realization. Often I have seen if you're working with whoever you're working with, but someone who's your supervisor, and they often just tell you, the stuff that you need to improve on or the things that you're not doing right, but you don't often get praise or credit for the mm-hmm. things that you are doing right, and no matter yeah. how big or small. And I think that's very important for morale, etc.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as far as like morale of the team goes, it's really like I've noticed that it varies like depending on the members, but also mm-hmm. like the time of year, obviously, like school's stressful, right? And this is like a student yeah. collective. Like we only have one community member, well, at least this past year and the year before. But that makes it really hard, right? Because students are going through a lot, and balancing that morale and like trying to keep it up throughout the entire year was hard. But I noticed like having more members again really boosted that because they mm-hmm. were a lot more excited to not have to like do either the same jobs every single time. So like with social media, it's a huge one. I hate running social media. I hate creating social media posts. I hate all of that so much. I would never go into marketing or like social media, anything. But someone's got to do it, right? We want to like tell our listeners when we're posting an episode yeah. or like when it's coming out.
And like, so your guests promoted, etc. Yeah. Yeah.
And so that was something that I was very open about this year of like, you know, I will take this on as the leader, but like I want people to step in if they feel like it. And it would bounce around. People would offer like, you know, oh, this week I have a bit more time, so I'll do the post. Whereas like, you know, a couple weeks later, someone else would have more time, so they do it. And I think that's awesome because, yeah, it's cool to like have a set thing. I know sometimes I like to have that like a schedule of like, oh, I need to do this like, you know, every 2 weeks or every week. But not everyone's like that. So I think that really makes it more approachable for everyone to join is like, you know, oh, this is something I can do this week, but not the next week, which is also something that I say whenever I would recruit new members, I'd be like, I will take whatever you give me. That's the basis of you joining the collective.
Just let me know.
Is you just communicate to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like what you want, what you can do.
Yeah, and just on the topic of morale, I've noticed from like bird's eye view that the more the collective leads are invested, the more passionate they are, it really rubs off on the team, and it is contagious because people are like, okay, they're invested, there must be something going on. And it's often like not to be like, oh, you have to sell it, but really like you have to make it tempting, like, oh, there is yeah. so much potential here, we can create so much. And even when I'm giving tours or talking to potential volunteers, I'm like, you can really make it what you want. No idea is going to be shot down because it's stupid, and you can always like maneuver an idea in a certain way that it can work for like any collective, right? Because I mean, yeah, like there are so many intersections and overlaps with like music and art and sports. And I know there have been collective episodes as well, like collective leads, where collective leads have collaborated with each other, which is always really sick to witness. And something that I have appreciated about intersectionality and about you running the collective is the emphasis on research, because I am a huge advocate for that. And as Randy and everybody is tired of me hearing, and the hill I'm gonna die on is informed banter, because I feel like people often coming into radio don't realize that you need to know what you're talking about. And yeah, sure, like you can be off the cuff and be like more chill and laid back, but then if you don't know what you're talking about, and if you feel like you can just kind of like say whatever and get away with it in the name of banter and fun time, you just lose your credibility. And then obviously that affects the station's legitimacy and everything. So have fun, but know what you're talking about. That is a good segue into telling you one of my memorable episodes.
Ooh.
As part of the ex-former Gender Empowerment Collective. I think you, me, and the former spoken word exec, Violet, we did an episode on MLMs. And I'm just so fascinated with MLMs. Like,
just for context for listeners, Hannah's talking about multi-level marketing schemes. I had someone point out to me, because people say MLM for like gay romance novels. So that was like a whole thing.
Oh, whoa. No idea.
I think people get the context, but I'm sorry.
Pyramid schemes. Or pyramid schemes. But yes, very much that. Not talking about gay romance novels. And it was just so fun. We all did such a good job. We all had different but related ideas and thoughts and research that we had put into it. And we all brought a lot of, different thoughts to the table. And I just had such a fun time doing research and, like, digging into this topic and then also, like, chatting. I remember it was still pandemic times, and so we did this episode over Zoom, and it was a roundtable discussion that we did on, just all the fun things. We talked about the phenomenon of girl boss, and then pyramid schemes and other related things. And that one just sticks out to me.
Yeah, that was also a really fun one. And that was something that I really wanted to do. That was when the collective was pretty small, and I was like pushing to do an episode on this, and there wasn't a lot of interest, which like is fine. I get it. I was on like a rabbit hole of like anti-MLM YouTube.
Remember that?
And so I was so into this, and I was like, I have to talk about this on the radio, because I already learned so much.
People must hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think I was talking about it with you, and you're like, yeah, we should do an episode. So then you came on, Violet joined us. And then I remember in the beginning, there was this YouTuber I was super into. And so I actually pulled clips from their videos. And that was the first time I really did any like clip audio editing, which is like a fun experiment. I hate it. It's so tedious. I mean, I love it. It's super cool, but it's also so tedious versus now just doing like an interview.
Yeah.
And I decided to create an entire show based around it, which is not going well. that one also sticks out, because I think it's still – there's definitely things – I think this is a really fascinating thing. Like, there's things I've said in the past on the show where I'm like, yeah, that's not how I'd phrase it now.
Yeah.
But I think that's just like – I mean, this conversation comes around all the time with like YouTubers or people existing on the internet. But this process of – like growth in the public eye. And so like if you go back and listen to those first episodes, I've learned so much since then, and I think that's really cool to see and to have a record of.
Yeah, that is always something that are you okay?
I'm good. Yeah.
That's something which people feel conflicted about, I imagine, because yeah, you're like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to delete all the past work that I have out on the internet, on the World Wide Web? But that's just, everything's a learning curve, right? And if anything, it's like, oh, wow, look how much I've grown. I sometimes cringe when I read some of my old writing, but then it's also like, oh, cool, look at me now. But sometimes I surprise myself. I'm like, I wrote this 7 years ago, and I don't know if I could write this again. So it's a weird one, like looking at your past work, be it like any past podcasts or radio shows I've done or a piece of writing. Lots of mixed feelings.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really fair. That's exactly how I feel. And I don't know, it was like really, I was talking to one of my friends and I was like thinking about when I go out and apply for jobs, there's like a huge record of me and all of my thoughts that's
every
out there
ever.
That anyone can just access and listen to. And I put CITR on my resume. Are you kidding? That's like the bulk of my degree is just CITR stuff.
Yeah.
It was really funny because I used to have my involvement with CITR on my volunteer section. And I recently moved it to like my experience, like work experience section.
I remember we talked about it. I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, you told me to move it and I moved it. And my dad reviewed my resume. He's like, why is it under the work? You weren't paid for it. And I was like, Dad, I don't care if I wasn't paid for it. I did work. Like,
it was legitimate work. And you were the intersectionality collective lead, which is a pretty nice title.
Yeah.
And you properly worked around the school year, led a collective and did everything, so it doesn't matter.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna say. Yeah, that's kind of, yeah, we can go into that, like qualms of community radio and not having enough funding and all that. But your dad can email me. We can talk.
Yeah. No, I definitely. Yeah, I think. I mean, we're getting to the end of the show, but the one thing I just want to leave off on, and this is not the thing I want to leave off on, but it was really funny because when you were like, "What are we going to talk about?" and I was like, "Why are you worried about what we're going to talk about something?" Like,
okay,
the
Randy.
Two of us have never had a conversation shorter than an hour.
That is very true. I just have anxiety, folks, and
yeah.
You know it. But no, that's true. And I did as soon as I sat in. Across from Randy in the guest chair, and I was like, oh, not like I've been doing this job for 3 years and I think and breathe in whatever collectives all the time, and I was like, oh
yeah.
I got this. But I did want, speaking of your role and giving you a shout out, which maybe now I'm being contradictory with what I want to share, is that we have NCRC coming up, for which a bunch of us are traveling, which is the National Radio Association of Canada's conference that happens every year, and all the community campus and community radio stations participate, and they have a bunch of awards which are called Crab Awards, and one of the categories is Volunteer of the Year, and for that category I nominated Randy and they won.
Yeah, so I'm an award-winning radio host now.
Yeah, so congrats again. It's so exciting. Oh, my God. And that's what I meant by contradictory, because I was like, oh, yeah, this was work, but also you were the volunteer of the year. But you know what? You can take both of that. Like, it's just multifaceted.
Yeah. Also, I mean, this, again, is like another conversation, but like, what is volunteer versus work? Like, how is volunteer less valid than work?
It's not, especially if it's full-time.
Yeah.
Ranging over a number of years. But also, you have been doing the intersectionality collective lead job full-time, and then you've been hosting your own show, which is your volunteer work, and then you've been doing other stuff. You've also been training folks as part of the exec, so you've been involved in the station in like every way one could. And I made sure, I was like, okay, Randy, have you thought about applying to be the student exec? And then Randy really wanted to do a radio show as a book club, and I was like, okay, let's brainstorm names. So I have just made sure.
So you're taking credit for my success story?
A little bit.
I will give you some credit. You deserve some credit, because all along the way you have been right there.
You're welcome.
Okay, none of these things were the point I wanted to end on. I don't remember the point I wanted to end. Oh, it was just, I think it was like very quickly that like I was very much like I grew up in the country, so I listened to the radio, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like I didn't know this is what the radio could be. And so like this has just inspired something in me that I didn't know being involved in the radio. And like I will take this and like, you know, the idea of being involved in the radio when I graduate and like, this sticks with me, I guess is what I'm saying. So it was really cool.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful note to end on.
It's a beautiful note. Okay, so we are going to end. Thank you for listening to this special episode of Intersections for the 85th anniversary of CITR. Very excited.
Very excited indeed. Thank you. And we have our 85th anniversary finale at the Red Gate, 9 p.m. on this Friday.
Nice.
Come out.
Yep. Be there. All right. Enjoy the rest of your sunny day.